You don't believe in tipping?
Don't give me that. She don't make enough money, she can quit.
Let me just get this straight. You don't ever tip, huh?
I don't tip because society says I have to. All right, I mean, I'll tip if somebody really deserves a tip. If they really put forth the effort, I'll give them something extra. But, I mean, it's tipping automatically. It's for the birds. Police and their backers. They're all political liars. Hurry. People running from their worries. While the judge and his juries dictate the law, this partner law.
Cat calling. Welcome back to Cairo Nights, everybody. I'm Spike O'Neill, that's Matt Butler. That, of course, was it just Michael Madsen's character and Buscemi, Mr. Pink?
Yeah,
and Mr. Buscemi,
yeah.
Was it Mr. White? Was that Madsen's character?
I think so, yeah.
Please don't quote me on that one. I know Pink, that's easy. Anyway, that's, of course, Reservoir Dogs. Let's take a minute to talk about, I'll talk about college football because it's a big week around the country, but I would be remiss if I didn't take a moment to acknowledge the tragedy in Virginia. University of Virginia football fell victim to gun violence this last week. Three players, Devin Chandler, Lavelle Davis Jr., and Deshaun Perry, lost their lives in gun violence. A fourth player was injured in this attack. A member of their own community opened fire on a charter bus that the players and some other students were using to travel back from a trip to see. I think it was a play being performed in Washington, D.C. and making their way back to the Virginia campus in Charlottesville. And it was announced during the news broadcast for our CBS national broadcast that University of Virginia has canceled last week's game against Coastal Carolina, and their final ball game against Virginia Tech will also be canceled because it's just, there's no way that community, and given this type of loss, could even think about playing a football game. And it kind of keeps in with the theme of the whole evening and night about remembering what we hold dear, you know, and acknowledging what matters to our life. The moments that we sometimes take for granted and the moments that we share communally. I talked about how, you know, having family this time of year is what matters. Even if that family is the guys at the bar you always see. Or maybe it's the other Cougars in your life or the other Huskies in your life. This Apple Cup week is here. You know, we're finally at that point of the season, last week of the season, for every college football team, last week of the regular season. Bowl season's upon us. And, you know, Saturday night I was at the Husky game. Huskies beat Colorado. I think it was 54-7, just an absolute destruction of the 1-9 Colorado Buffaloes. And I noticed on the field that it's Alaska Airlines Field at Husky Stadium, if I want to make sure I give proper acknowledgement to the good folks at Alaska Airlines who help sponsor and maintain the field at Husky Stadium. They paid for the name rights, so I'm going to make sure I give it to them. The 1 yard line, the 15-yard line and the 41-yard line, the yard markers on the field at Husky Stadium, were orange at the 1, 15, and 41 to designate the numbers worn by those three Virginia athletes who lost their lives to gun violence. And I thought that was a lovely tribute, just a moment to have folks give a thought and maybe a prayer to the college football community, not just of Virginia, but everywhere, everybody's. You know, every college football fan. And, you know, and we have the ability to move on and heal and, you know, treasure the moments in our lives that matter. And one of those is Apple Cup. You know, this town goes crazy for Apple Cup, as well they should. And it's a pretty great year for both squads. You know, surprisingly so, because the last year was a year where the Wazoo Cougars had to, you know, start over again. Their coach was let go because he refused to get a vaccine, and we're not going to get into that whole rigmarole. they're now 7-4, riding a 3-game win streak. The Wazoo Cougars went to Arizona and beat the Wildcats down in the desert, in Tucson, this last weekend. And as I mentioned, the Huskies just decimated Colorado. Huskies at 9-2. Cougars at 7-4. The game, of course, is in Pullman this year. This could be a big game for both teams. Both teams with a lot on the table for this game. And I mean, I almost wish it was here. Last year, the Cougars came to Washington. Washington, of course, in the middle of a horrific year last year. Lost to the Cougars here at Husky Stadium. Snapped a 7-game Washington win streak in the series. And they danced at the Big W in the middle of Husky Stadium, the Cougars and their fans. Lots of fans wearing the crimson and gray last year in Seattle. Lots of them. Out on the field, just celebrating, waving that Cougar flag you see every Saturday at game day, no matter where game day is. Somebody from the Cougar Nation brings a Cougar flag and waves it on game day. Nice long tradition there. So there's a lot going for this game. You know, for the Huskies, it's an outside chance, but they still have a chance to play for a conference championship. Huskies are 9-2 with a loss to UCLA and a loss to, can't believe, Arizona State on how that one got away. But Huskies need to beat the Cougars and have Oregon State beat Oregon in their, do they still call it a civil war? They used to call it a civil war down there, but I think political correctness got the best of that. I'll have to find out and let you know. But the game's in Corvallis at Oregon State. So the Ducks with an injured quarterback in Bo Nix could lose that game. If the Huskies manage to beat the Cougars, if the Ducks manage to lose to Oregon State, to the Beavers, we would need that game to go our way and for Cal to beat UCLA. If both those things happen, Huskies get the, and they beat the Cougars, which is no given in Pullman. And the Huskies would get a chance to play for USC for a Pac-12 championship, which would be flipping awesome for a team that was 4-8 last year and a brand new head coach, Kalen DeBeer, this year. You know, wasn't expected to do much. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal year for the team. And the Cougars are 7-4. They're looking to get 2 in a row. And they're looking to improve their bowl situation because they're bowl eligible. They're going bowling this year. So it's a lot going on. Great weekend. College football weekend. Oh, by the way, if the Ducks lose to the Beavers, and if UCLA manages to beat Cal, which they probably should, Huskies can still get in if that 1-9 Colorado team manages to beat Utah. I don't think that's going to happen, but you never know. That's why they make them play the games. You never know. Anyway, Apple Cup is always a fun week. Always a fun week. And the jokes start, you know. You know, what is a, I'm not going to say a lot of jokes. I'll quote the great Don James, legendary Washington Coast Don James. If you're going to make Cougar or Husky jokes, and there's thousands of them, I'll never forget once we had someone come and make us grilled Cougar meat on a barbecue outside of the studio for one of our first Apple Cup weeks here in Seattle when we moved back here back in the 89, 90, 92, 91, 92 era. Realized what a bad idea that was, what a bad radio stunt that was, because lost us a lot of Cougar fans in our audience.
At least it wasn't a wild boar.
Yeah, yeah. Don James says, I think it's great that students play for Wazoo. I'm going to paraphrase, I'll probably mess this up. I think it's great that Wazoo, being a Cougar is great because it teaches people not to expect too much in life. That's Don James. That was his dig on the whole cup, the whole Apple Cup week. It's state rivalries are great. Everybody plays their cross-state rival this week. It's the Iron Bowl, Auburn, Alabama. It's Paul Bunyan's axe in Wisconsin, Minnesota. I mean, every team has their rival. And these weeks are the best. Just the best week of college football is rivalry week. And we would be remiss if we didn't mention the Seahawks who had a bye week last week after their loss in Germany to the Tampa Bay Bucks. So now we wonder, like, you know, what do you expect out of the Seahawks down the stretch? You know, what's it going to take? What do you, after, and I don't think anybody expected them to run the table this year, especially given the fact that most people, including myself, didn't expect them to do much of nothing this year. You know, when Pete Carroll said we have two starting quarterbacks in Geno Smith and Drew Locke, I came on there and said that really means we have no starting quarterback. And Geno proved me and everybody else wrong. And Geno didn't play poorly in Germany last week in the loss to the Bucks. And the Hawks are still 6-4 in first place. I think tonight the Niners came back and decimated the Cardinals. I think it was 31-10. If I got that, if I think I gave a quick look before, I'm trying to remember if that was the final score in that game. But the Hawks are still in first place, taking on the Raiders this week. Raiders managed to beat the Broncos, which was really nice because, you know, every time the Broncos lose, an angel gets its wings. And that would, oh, no, I'm sorry. Every time the Broncos lose, the Seahawks get a better draft pick in the Russell Wilson trade. That's what it was. Yeah. So the Raiders, who are having a dismal year, come to town. They'll play at Lumen Field on Sunday. Hawks at 6-4. And what do we expect down the stretch? Clearly not the defense that showed up in Germany because they got manhandled by the Buccaneers. And I kind of gave a little postmortem on that the Monday after, last Monday, why I thought the Hawks looked as bad as they did. Seahawks really kind of woke up in the fourth quarter and almost came back and overtook the Buccaneers and Tom Brady. But to be fair, even that last drive, if Tom Brady needed to score, he could have scored. Let's not kid ourselves on that one. Seahawks have a young, inexperienced secondary with tons of talent but not a lot of experience going against a quarterback like Tom Brady who could do whatever he wanted to against the defensive secondary. And I think they only touched Tom Brady one time in that game in Germany, the Seahawks defense. Really, Tom Brady got no pressure for the bulk of the ball game. In fact, for the whole ball game. And it's just my armchair Monday morning, you know, interpretation of the game that when you've got to dedicate most of your resources to stopping a guy like Tom Brady, you don't have the resources to fill the box and stop the run. So the worst team in the NFL in running the football, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I think they racked up like 160-some yards on the ground against the Seahawks in Germany. So that was kind of the effect of trying to stop Tom Brady was you couldn't also stop the run. And that's why the Hawks played as poorly as they did. You know, we're a young and experienced team. Two rookies, offensive tackle starters against a pretty good experienced Tampa Bay Buccaneer defense. Didn't do a great job. And the Hawks lost. But going down the stretch, we've still got games against this weekend the Raiders. If I'm not mistaken, we got the Carolina Panthers on the schedule. Got the Jets on the schedule. Got the Niners one more time. The Rams twice. The Hawks, realistically, can finish with 10 wins, maybe 11 wins, make the playoffs for a Seahawks team that no one expected bupkis from. Coming out of the gate, it's pretty damn great. Looking forward to this. Anyway, given the mood we were all in and the kind of show we put out here, Matt, I'm going to just talk a little sports. Hope you don't mind. It was fun for me. By the way, the World Cup team tied Wales. I gave it a chance. I'm tired of it. you folks who hate spoilers, that's tough noogies. How about you, Matt Butler?
How about me?
How about that Matt Butler, huh?
Oh, was that a question or an observation?
Yeah, about you, man. How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Good.
It's a short week for me. Of sorts, but yeah. Still, if it's always an interesting mood around the holidays,
right?
Because you know, like people are saying, sometimes people start to take it a little easier, and it's a little bit more of a relaxed mood around the workplace.
Yeah,
it can be kind of fun.
It's enjoyable. You know, it's not like we're doing you know knee replacements or you know putting heart valves in.
We can slack a little bit. Tune in to hear that.
Well, I mean, you know, we can slack a little bit. Is what I'm saying. You know, I don't know if I'm going to schedule my open heart surgery on Christmas week or, you know, Thanksgiving week. Doctor's looking at the clock trying to catch a flight to Aruba. It's gonna. That's good enough. You hear a good enough.
Or senators catching flights to Cancun.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Boom, baby. Oh, yeah. We haven't mentioned politics once tonight. It's already 9:21. Wow, we almost made it. Let's talk politics. You did a nice job filling up the show with stuff that wasn't very politically motivated tonight, and I appreciate that. You know? We should mention the psychedelic caucus, though. I love you found that story.
That's bipartisan.
I know, right? MAPS, which is, what is that group? I'm going to make sure I get MAPS. I'm trying. It's in really small print on my computer. The Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies. The Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies. Yeah. These are the folks that want to champion the use of psychedelics in healthcare. And apparently now we've got numerous members of Congress who are warm to the idea. That's fabulous. MAP celebrates the formation of the Congressional Psychedelics Advancing Clinical Treatments Pact. Caucus, excuse me. The Psychedelics Advancing Clinical Treatments Caucus. That's PACT, P-A-C-T. Nice. Led by Representatives Lou Correa, a Democrat from California, and Jack Bergman, a Republican from Michigan. The caucus will consist of bipartisan members of Congress committed to addressing ways to alleviate the national mental health crisis through psychedelic science and research. PAC looks to advance research into the therapeutic use of psychedelic compounds and ensure any FDA-approved psychedelic assistance therapies are available to those in need. In accordance with the law, of course, nice disclaimer. The PAC caucus will be offering recommendations on decriminalization, legalization, rescheduling or descheduling psychedelic substances. They will not be offering recommendations on decriminalization, legalization, rescheduling, or descheduling psychedelic substances. Rather, the goals of the caucus are to increase awareness of psychedelic assistance therapies among members of Congress and their staffs, support increases in federal funding for psychedelic science, and examine regulatory impediments to psychedelic research. I can't even say it. It's so revolutionary. Yep. It's the Trip Caucus, the Psychedelic Caucus, the Pact Caucus. That's fantastic. The Congressional Psychedelics Advancing Clinical Treatments Caucus, or Pact. Nice. Huh. I want to get the huh. I was timing it out for the huh. And you can donate to MAPS. Their website is maps.org. I guess maps.com was taken by people who want to tell you how to get somewhere. I think it's fantastic. Good on you. We've got openly gay members of Congress. We've got openly trans members of Congress. We have a Congress that is more representative of the American people than ever before. And yep, you trippers even got your seat at the table. Well done. Well done, America. We're making America great again, Matt. Look at us. It's Cairo Nights. We'll be right back. To Cairo Nights, everybody. I'm Spike O'Neill. Matt's at the board. Masterful job, as always, my friend. I have been avoiding this story like the plague, Matt.
Have you now?
Yes, I have.
Well, we made it 2.5 hours.
I know, right? I may have to just dive in here. I am not a tweeter. I have a Twitter account, but it is gets as much action. I'm not going to make a Betty. I was going to make a Betty White joke, but I'm not going to do that. My Twitter account is neglected. It's abandoned. It's sad. I should be more active on Twitter. I should be more active.
Should you?
I guess. I guess I should. Or I don't know.
Most people shouldn't.
That's true. I think Twitter is
it's a dumpster fire.
It's a dumpster fire. It's a dangerous
cesspool.
What? Yes.
A sewer. How many more words do we need?
A beacon of freedom and information.
Right.
It's half lighthouse, half outhouse. Right. It really is. It's an interesting little monster. It has the potential to do both great and terrible things, and has actually done both in the past and currently doing both at the same time. It's like Frankenstein's monster, but when he sings Putting on the Ritz in the Young Frankenstein movie, right? It's got the potential to do irreparable harm. It's got the ability to spread misinformation like wildfire. To spread hate and violent speech like wildfire. And so it's a double-edged sword without a handle. You have to hold it by the part that will cut your hand off. It's crazy scary, but it's become part of the fabric of how we communicate. And I wonder if under the guidance of Elon Musk, it will even survive.
I was going to say guidance. That's an interesting use of this term. In the same way that a parent is, parenting their child and guiding their child when they let them run wild and destroy the house.
Well, or put them in a barbed wire playpen. You know, I mean, it is dangerously insane. But what do I know from billionaire minds? I don't know nothing. I don't know how to run a solid business plan. I don't know what's going to be best for Twitter.
He doesn't either, because if he were going into this with a plan, he would have anticipated much of this happening. He didn't. He got stuck with the thing, and now he's got to figure out how to make it not die.
Well, that's an interesting analogy. I want to talk about this now because they have reinstated the former president's Twitter account. As of Saturday night, Elon Musk has now the, grand poobah of Twitter, the main twit. I don't know. What do you refer to him as?
He actually put Chief Twit in his bio. Chief That's twit. Not a diss. Oh, it's God. Actually what he calls himself.
That's okay. What a tool. He has reinstated the account of the former president. Let's keep in mind why former President Trump lost his Twitter account. It was deemed that he, after being suspended multiple times, couldn't control himself and kept spreading information that people deemed not just false, but dangerous. He and repeatedly. And then the libtard powers that be at Twitter, if you believe the supporters of the former president, decided to unfairly, block the free speech of the conservative movement.
Do I have to remind people what free speech is and is not, or have part down pat?
I hope we have, but who knows? And if they haven't got it by now, they won't get it. So quit beating your head against the wall, not theirs. There's such a bigger story here than whether or not Donald Trump has learned anything. I know.
Taking bets?
I know. I almost made it without laughing out loud. If the former president, who is making a third run at the Oval Office, has learned from his burned hand, when you're banned from Twitter, is it just the burned thumb that teaches best? Has he learned that given the power of his position and the power of the medium of Twitter that he masterfully takes to, has he learned that it can be misused and be dangerous? Will he re-enter this Twittosphere more reasonable, more responsible, more based in a knowledge of the power that he wields? Because that would be kind of going against all the trends he has set throughout his professional, private, and political lives. Because, you can't learn from a mistake if you won't admit to a mistake. I'm no psychologist, but I pretty much can put that one on a pillow on grandma's couch. And President Trump, to his credit, and part of his strategy as who he is to punch back and never admit a mistake. We all make mistakes, and hopefully we learn from mistakes. But again, you can't learn from a mistake if you can't admit you made one. So the prospect of former President Trump not violating the rule. Are there still rules on Twitter against hate speech and violent speech? I hope so.
Supposedly. Nobody's there to enforce them. So there was a 500% increase in the first week of Elon Musk owning Twitter. Let's just point out this stellar improvement, a 500% increase in the use of the N-word. Good job, Elon.
But to be fair, that means there could have been used five times instead of one time. I don't know how many times it was used, or 5 million times as opposed to, I don't know. You're right. No, I hear you. I hear you. And I hope we all can agree that there's no place for hate speech in any political stripe, whatever side, in anything, whatever side of the aisle you're on, whether it's, your position on who a married couple should be, who should be able to be in love, what kind of privacy and respect we should have for each other. Hate speech has no place in a civilized society. I mean, it has a place, but not a place that we should accept. We shouldn't tolerate and accept hate speech in any way, shape, or form in any medium.
Well, according to Tucker, hate speech doesn't exist anyway. I have a quote here from him on that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, according to Tucker Carlson, the truth is, quote, this is quoting Tucker Carlson, by the way, quote, the truth is all speech except speech that encourages people to illegal action like, quote, go shoot that guy. Short of that, there's no hate speech.
Wow, what a convenient way to hide your hide the effects of your work.
So apparently saying hateful things is now no longer hate speech, according to good old Tucker.
Well, he's not the arbiter of fact, so at least that was his defense. That was his defense in court. Right, that reasonable people wouldn't take what I say as fact. I'm an entertainer.
Well, he's right about that.
Yeah.
Well, people would not take what he says literally.
Yeah. I'm almost as concerned as to how Elon Musk dodged the responsibility of the decision to whether or to reinstate the former president or not. He put it up to public vote. He let the mob rule.
Hey, Spike, I've got an idea.
Yeah.
Can we call for an audit of that vote? Just to make sure.
Are you denying the election? No, that's great. That's funny. I like that. You know what? He was going to do what he was going to do, and he found a way to do it. You know, he wanted the former president on his platform because it's his best advertisement. But he didn't want the responsibility of what may be a consequence. You know, if the worst case happens and the former president hasn't learned from any of his previous mistakes or transgressions with regard to guidelines and boundaries, then Elon Musk got what he wanted without any of the responsibility of making that decision. He put it in the people's court and let, you know, the mob rule.
And I'm sure nobody voted multiple times. I'm sure there are no bots voting because, of course, Elon is minding the store so well that poll is completely illegitimate.
Yeah, with half the staff and begging people to come back that he already fired.
Well, you made it almost to 15 minutes before the end of the show before sending my heart rate skyrocketing.
I'm so sorry, buddy. I'm so sorry. I knew there was a reason we weren't talking politics tonight. It was because I care about you.
Yes. You went to save my life.
Coming up next, we'll have a chance to recap how you guys took part in the show tonight. Some of the texts that came in, and we appreciate them always. It's always a fun time here at Cairo Nights, whether we're screaming at each other or bathed in love and hugs. It's always a fun time. We'll be right back after these. We started the show off tonight pretty heavy, talking about the shooting in Colorado Springs and our Our thoughts are with that community, and not just that community in Colorado Springs, but the LGBTQ community around the world. Even in Qatar, where the players can't wear supporting wristbands, armbands. A texter from the 253. Who's going to read to the kids in their place if they ban Drag Queen Story Hour? The scout leader with a mustache, the Catholic priest? You know, the guys who actually do abuse kids. I think the people out there who want this regulation are afraid that the drag queens are the ones that will rat them out. That might be the best text I've ever read. Just because it agrees with my previous point of view, you know. And you folks who disagree, that's cool too, man. I like that you're here. I really do. Spike, I'm an old straight guy. Thanks for your eloquent honesty. Your family has every right to be proud of you. I appreciate that. I can tell you how much. We talked about, you know, drag and its place in our world. How about bosom buddies? How about your national treasure, Tom Hanks, getting his career off to a rocking start by being a trans guy?
You never heard these concerns buddies when Mrs. Doubtfire was out.
You know, Tootsie with Dustin Hoffman, Mrs. Doubtfire with Robin Williams, bosom buddies with Tom Hanks, you know, Jack Lemmon and Tony Curtis in Some Like It Hot. It's been going around forever. Quit letting people tell you that drag queens are coming after your kids. They're not. They're not. There's drag for adults and there's drag for kids. And there's a whole spectrum that we should all be more aware of. And whether it's not your cup of tea or not, I get it. Let's not promote the fear-mongering and hate-mongering that leads to the violence in any for any cause against any group. You know, there's no place in our society for hate speech. And we talked about Twitter. We talked about Elon Musk and his overturning, his upending of Twitter. His reinstatement of the former president. We made it the whole show until the last break without talking about it, so let's just not even go back to that. We talked about the psychedelic caucus in Congress, and psychonauts was a term put out there. Instead of trippers, psychonauts. Thanks, Farmer Brown. I'm gonna keep using that one all the time. It's great. Someone said, I had just looked up the time schedule for the Pullman kickoff for Apple Cup this Saturday. It's at 7:30, by the way. And then we started talking about the Apple Cup Go Cougs. Absolutely. Can you please stop pronouncing Qatar as Cutter? It's insulting and grating. Hey, I'm trying. Lisa was telling me there was a New York Times that put an audio story about how the correct way to pronounce Qatar. And you know how you're supposed to have a guttural K sound from the back of your throat? I'll say Qatar. I don't mean to be insulting and grating on the audience. It's kind of my bread and butter, but I'll make an effort. I don't want anybody to be insulted and grated. Come on. We're talking about how FIFA won't let seven European nations wear an armband of support for the LGBTQ community. And a texter pointed out that FIFA has a history of being about the profit and not about the game for a long time now. So it has to be the consumer, not the product, that needs to change. So the consumer has to say, we give an F about this. Dave Ross was in Qatar, pardon me, it's hard to change, for about a month after 9/11. That was the staging area for the invasion of Iraq. I remember that. And in fact, Qatar was the reason behind the first Gulf War. It was kicking Saddam Hussein back out of Qatar. Bum, bum, bum. Good times. A small minority of drag are groomers. Let's get them gone. That is real, says a texter. And you may be right. I said this many times. I said it earlier tonight. Every group has exceptions. that have no place in that group. And we shouldn't judge that group by all those exceptions, whether it's Catholic priests, Boy Scout leaders, drag queens, whatever.
I hope that texture will be equally strong on corrupt cops.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I think we can all agree on that. And one bad apple don't, to quote the great Donny Osmond, one bad apple don't spoil the whole bunch. You know, generalizations, one of the seven deadly sins, I believe, generalization. Judging a whole group by the actions of one or few. We don't do that here. Nope. It's Cairo Nights. What a fun night. I appreciate you guys sticking with us and let me feel my way through how I'm feeling these days with you. Matt, thank you, my friend. Great job, man. Kuwait was the country in the first Gulf War, not Qatar. Thank you. Qatar. It's hard, but I'm working on it. It's hard. Thanks. A lot of people, Kuwait. I appreciate that, guys. See that, guys? I left smarter than I got here tonight. Again, that mission accomplished. We'll see you guys tomorrow night. Thanks for being here.